Okay, so hello and welcome back to the Dentistry Online podcast. I'm here today with Nigel Jones, the Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan. But before we launch into a dental conversation, somebody told me that you are a Liverpool fan. Is that right?
I am indeed, yes. Yes. A very happy Liverpool fan.
I was gonna ask how the last sort of, well, I mean, when was it now? It was a few weeks back, but how was that for you?
It was excellent. I happened to be in the car at the time listening to the Chelsea-Manchester City match. And even with 30 seconds to go, I wasn't quite ready to believe what was going to happen. And I'm not quite sure what the other road users or indeed the police would have thought 30 seconds later when I was punching the air and just going crazy in my car driving along. But it was a really, really good moment. I used to go and watch Liverpool play right the way through the 80s. When we were in our heyday, so it's been a long, long time coming, and I'm very, very happy.
I'm okay with football knowledge, but am I right in saying it was 1990 was the last time you guys won?
Thank you for that. Yes, 30 years. it's been a long, long, long wait, but fingers crossed, this is the start of a new chapter where we. This doesn't become another 30-year wait. It becomes something that we do on a fairly regular basis.
Well, yeah, fingers crossed. Although, as an Arsenal fan, they're not too cross, to be honest with you. So,
you've got an increasingly long wait as well, haven't you? Now,
we're in the FA Cup final, so that's our time to shine, I think. Sorry, yeah. So, football aside, back to Practice Plan. What's the story behind you guys? For anyone who doesn't know, how did you start up and
Well, the specifics in terms of Practice Plan are that it was started in 1995, so we're celebrating our 25th anniversary, by an independent financial advisor called John Tinsley and his wife Jan. John used to have a number of clients that were dental clients who worked with Denplan, who at that point were pretty much the only company offering dental plans. And he had a number of reservations about the Denplan approach, I think it's fair to say, which he raised with Denplan, but at the time Denplan didn't want to change course at all, as is their right. So John, being John, decided that in that case he'd set up his own company and do what he thought was a better approach. And that involved stuff to do with plan design and stuff to do with the branding of the plan so that they were branded in line with the dental practice brand rather than a third party company brand. And he went from strength to strength. And I think he and Jan put a huge amount of work and effort into giving the company momentum. Mm-hmm. They then moved on in 2005, but by that stage, that momentum had grown and grown. And when the new contract happened in 2006, Practice Plan was well and truly propelled onto the dental stage. And I joined in 2008. And what I love about Practice Plan, I mean, I've been working in the profession for 30 years or so now. And one of the things that I think we do very well at Practice Plan, and I should say that the Practice Plan group, which includes Practice Plan, DPAS, and Medenta, the patient finance company, what we're all really passionate about is helping dental practices be as successful as they can. And yes, in part that involves using dental plans or using patient finance in the most effective way. But actually our support broadens out far, far beyond that into all aspects of practice management. And in particular, helping dentists that want to leave the pressures of the NHS and move private, make that change in a successful way. And that's where the real rewards come. I've worked with so many dentists over the years who have been left disillusioned and demotivated, lost, and actually unsure whether or not they want to continue in the profession. And being able to take them from feeling like that to people that have fallen back in love with the profession and are enthused and motivated and excited about the future, that's where the passion comes from.
Do you think that's what's allowed Practice Plan to sort of get to where it is today? Because obviously, like you said earlier, you're celebrating 25 years. What do you think sort of lies behind this achievement of getting up to this point? What do you think is about you guys that means you've been able to get to where you are today?
Well, I think that's probably summed up with the point I made about making practices successful. Mm-hmm. Our purpose is very clear. That's what we're doing. We have our customers, who are the dental practices, the practice owners, the associate dentists, the mm-hmm. hygienists, the practice teams. They are absolutely at the heart of what we do. And that's the kind of fairly naff corporate type thing that people say. But if you were to spend time in practice plan, that it just comes across. It's just what we're all about. And I think because we've never lost sight of that, never lost the focus on supporting the practice, we've got complete clarity mm-hmm. over the fact that they are our customers and they are our reason for being, that we just all pulled together. I think we are often described as having this fabulous family feel as a team at PPG. And that's, I think, really been part of it. And it's been easy to unite that family around that purpose.
You said you've been in the industry that for 30 years. How have things changed across that time? And how has Practice Plan adapted to those? Has it been a challenge? Have there been any obstacles that have sort of come in your way and you've had to overcome? Or has it been quite smooth sailing?
Oh, I mean, in the 30 years that I've been working with dentistry, it's funny. I suppose the answer to the question of have things changed is that some things haven't changed and some things have changed beyond all recognition. And but the kind of things that haven't changed, I started helping dentists in May 1990, actually that's when I first started with the profession, escape what was then called the new NHS contract that was introduced in October 1990. And some of the conversations I would have with dentists at that time, I'm still having today. There's so much fear, and it's almost as if the NHS takes the self-esteem out of the profession. And they lose confidence. And I actually think my role has been about giving confidence to dentists a lot of the time and to their teams, because I think they underestimate just how valued they are by their patients and how loyal their patients are to them. And I'll touch on that again in a sec, actually. But that is still a constant. 30 years later, that's still the way that people feel, I think. They lack confidence in that patient loyalty. But the things that have changed are, I mean, it's such a challenging environment, I think, to run a practice in nowadays. If I look at what's happened in terms of regulation, I mean, that's escalated beyond anything I could have imagined. Things like the fear of complaints, litigation, the role of the GDC. The GDC, when I first started with the profession, was not held in anything like the kind of level of fear that it is nowadays. So that's been a big change. And the sheer complexity in terms of the business challenges, I think that's changing. You look at things like the evolution of the dental chains, that's a completely new business dynamic within the industry compared to 30 years ago. And I think it's been fascinating because it's also created lots of opportunities whilst at the same time a few threats that practices have to deal with. But it means that practices have got an awful lot more to think about than they had 30 years ago. But I think if you're positive and proactive, then actually that's not a bad thing. In fact, it's a really good thing. I think the challenges, the road bumps and things, well, nothing compares to the last few months and the COVID crisis. I mean, I've not seen anything like this in those 30 years. I think the amount of information and the speed and regularity with which the goalposts move for the profession is incredible. People overuse the word unprecedented, but they overuse it because it's so appropriate. And these really are unprecedented times. And I think my admiration for the dental profession and its ability to cope and absorb with what's happened in the last few months, it's been nonstop. I remember a couple of weeks into lockdown thinking, well, at least it'll ease up in the next week or two. Well, you know, it's been several months now. It's not eased up. We're still absolutely flat out.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people who had exactly that same thought. It did come out of nowhere, the lockdown, and then, you know, it started off 3 weeks. Then we all realised it wasn't just going to be 3 weeks; it was definitely going to be more. And here we are. And you know what? We are starting to see I know, again, you say unprecedented's being overused, new normal, I think, is being overused too. But again, it's very applicable to the situation. And I think we are starting to see what that's going to look like. But applying that word to dentistry, what do you think that is going to look like now in the coming months? I mean, I know it's quite difficult to predict because, like you said, everything is constantly changing, like absolutely in dentistry in particular. But what would you say going forward for you guys as well? You'd see things heading.
I mean, that is a really difficult question to answer, I think, because I suppose give a sense of what I think, but I still find now that I could come off this conversation, come away from this conversation, check my emails, and there's a new bit of information there that changes my take or my perspective on how things will evolve. What I think is fairly likely is that the next few weeks and months are likely to be challenging. I think dentists and practice owners in particular will need to focus on business measures in a way that they haven't really done before, because I think cash flow could be a real challenge. The reduction in productivity caused by some of the safety measures that have had to be introduced, which means that reduction in the number of patients coming through a practice, is definitely going to have an impact. Now, clearly, if you're an NHS dentist in England, where you're now required 20% of an activity measure, 400% of your contract value, that you don't really have those same cash flow challenges. But the vast majority of practices are mixed to varying degrees. And I think maintaining private income is going to be a challenge. And costs are obviously going up. Government support is likely to fade away. So those sorts of challenges all around the running of the business and the financial management of dental practices will need a clear focus. And it will be tough, I think, for a number of practices. But if I go beyond the next few months and start looking at the medium term and the long term, I think it's an incredibly exciting time for dentistry. I think that the NHS, when it comes to dentistry, will have to change. I think the COVID crisis has shown how underfunded social care is in this country, and also secondary care, acute care, the hospitals. And it's hard to imagine, particularly given the economic crisis that's likely to hit us, that we'll be able to invest heavily in NHS dentistry. If anything, I think we'll be lucky if we maintain the same level of funding for NHS dentistry. And I think they will be looking for new models of how to deliver that. And I can see there being a real shift towards private dentistry. Now, of course, it suits my commercial agenda to say that. Maybe I'm just looking at that and hoping that's what's going to happen. But I see it as being unavoidable. And in fact, we're already seeing it. So many, in fact, the majority of our practices are reporting a significant increase in the number of patients inquiring about private dentistry. And I suspect that that's because the waiting times for NHS dentistry have been pushed out so far. But those people that prioritise their oral health are thinking, well, if I have to pay more to get access, that's what I'll do. Mm. And then I think as we go forward, I think a lot of dentists will want to think quite carefully about whether they want the apparent safe haven. And I use the word apparent because I still think there are some strings that will be attached, some stings in the tail, some things that emerge going forward that maybe make it feel less safe. But I think a lot of NHS dentists have felt quite vulnerable because they feel out of control of things. And the appeal of private practice is they can feel more like masters of their own destiny. You clearly can't control a virus. You can't control the global economy, but you can control how you respond to both more easily in a private environment without having to wait for centralized direction. And we're already seeing quite a significant increase in demand for particularly our change management services, where we help dentists assess the risks involved in going private and then plan a route out that's as safe as possible. We've seen significant spikes of interest, particularly in Scotland and Northern Ireland, but a growing level of interest in England, I think, in anticipation of what might be tougher times to come, even if right now it feels okay. So I think the future for the profession is actually really quite a positive one, because as more people move private, And demand for private dentistry goes up. The supply is pretty much the same, so that will strengthen the position of dentists. And because we're primarily associated with helping and supporting dentists make a success in private dentistry, then that can only be good for us as well.
No, absolutely. And you mentioned there that you've seen these spikes in interest in Northern Ireland and Scotland, and especially in England. How did you handle? So, I mean, just sort of rewinding a little bit, how did you guys at Practice Plan handle the pandemic, and how did you support dentists during this time? Because, I mean, we spoke prior to this conversation, we were, you know, it was a hectic time for everybody. What was it that you guys did? How did you sort of set yourself up for what was to come?
Well, I think going back to that point about the fact that we know our purpose is to help dental practices and practice owners be successful. Mm. And in order to do that, we have to stay very, very close to the challenges that they are facing. And I think, you know, I mean, it's been such a hectic, such a mad time, because we normally have a proportion of our practices that have got specific challenges that we're trying to help them with, but a majority that are actually quite comfortable ticking over and achieving what they want to achieve. To have every single one of the practices that we work with at the same time faced with this enormous raft of challenges was just unbelievable. And me and my teams were working absolutely flat out trying to deal with all of those questions as and when they came in. What we managed to do incredibly quickly, I think, is we got some online resources up. In fact, on the day that lockdown was announced, we had a whole set of resources available online that we then just enhanced. In fact, we were updating daily, because as news changed and new papers came out and new guidance came out, we were keeping that up to date. As practices around the country were responding and adapting to the new circumstances, we were sharing best practice and coming up with kind of video testimonials and guidance and a whole load of stuff around how to communicate with patients given the lockdown scenario, and different ideas that different practices have gotten, just making sure that we shared all of that around. My team of people that visit practices normally in person on a daily basis were having to do that virtually. And we were reaching out to every single one of our practices to find out what they needed and to try and answer the questions that were arising for them. As well as the online resources, we had planned actually for the second half of this year to start delivering webinars. We already deliver a whole raft of events, sort of a couple a week on average, to the dental profession in all different parts of the UK. Uh-huh. On business-related topics when it comes to practice management. And we've become very, very good at those events. All of a sudden, we were faced with not being able to hold those events and trying to do them online. So our plans to do webinars in the second half of the year got brought forward by 3 or 4 months. And that's gone incredibly well. The team that have been responsible for that have done a superb job. So, you know, we've done a whole host of this supportive stuff to make sure the practice is successful. And then in addition to that, we can successfully navigate the challenging times. And then in addition to that, we recognize that whilst practices were trying to source government support in a financial sense at the beginning of lockdown, there could be a real cash flow problem for them, because their private income, the fees that they were taking over the counter, just stopped as soon as lockdown happened. So we recognized there was a cash flow crisis in those first couple of months. So we halved our administration charges to practices during that period of time, just so that we could help them address that short-term cash flow problem that they were having right at the start of lockdown. So, you know, we did an awful lot. And I think also fundamentally, the whole concept of membership plans and the fact that there's a level of secure income coming in was a huge help. And we found that we were scenario planning at the time for mass patient cancellations, because we thought if they can't access their dentist, they're not going to want to carry on paying their direct debits. And it just didn't happen. Yeah, we had a little spike right at the beginning of lockdown and into April. But actually, I think the loyalty that patients have for their dentists and their desire to support them just overrode everything. And they thought, well, I'm not going to cancel my membership because I still want that dentist, because as far as I'm concerned, I've got the only decent dentist in the country and I'm not going to lose him or her. So I'm going to stay as supportive as I possibly can. And that's been very much the case. It's been absolutely remarkable. And even my most optimistic view of the future was understated. It's been much better than even my most optimistic view. So I'll say I look back on that. And I think I will, when I get to the end of my career, I'll actually look back on how we responded and how we helped our clients through this period with you know, probably the proudest period of the time that I've had here.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not surprised by that, to be honest. I think when you're in the moment, and it's, you know, when it was in April and it was all happening and everyone got very overwhelmed, but like everything, you come through it and then you look back, and hindsight is quite a nice thing because you get to look back and you're like, actually, it was stressful. And now we have the privilege of sort of taking, I mean, I'm not saying it's not stressful anymore, of course, but it has calmed down. And you can now look back and think, you know, that actually made you stronger, you know, brought you together and showed that you can work in environments and situations that you perhaps didn't expect to be able to do. So yeah, absolutely. I understand that. I mean, you mentioned payment plans and how people weren't cancelling, and it surprised you, and it showed that there's sort of loyalty to practices and dentists. Do you think the pandemic has sort of highlighted the importance of payment plans and things like that? And how do you think this is going to change you guys going forward? Is there anything you've taken away, sort of lessons you've learned from the pandemic that you're now going to apply in the future?
so the short answer would be absolutely yes. And I think the point about what has the pandemic meant for the concept of plans, I think it's been a massive, massive endorsement. I mean, it's a big cloud. You can't. I mean, it's horrific when you hear some of the personal stories, how people have been affected. It was a horrible, horrible situation that we've been living through over the last few months. My heartfelt sympathies go out to everyone, and particularly those that have been very, very acutely touched by it. Mm-hmm. There are some silver linings, and some of those silver linings, I think, to do with a catalyst for change and the chance for people to rethink how they do things. And certainly from our point of view, I think that what has really been demonstrated is the value of that cash flow. And in fact, many of our practices said they would have gone bust if they didn't have their planned cash flow. And what's happening is that people that had a very well populated plan base have been happy, and they just know they need to keep it that way. Those people that had dabbled with plans but didn't really have a significant number have thought, wow, we need to change that. We need to drive up the number of people that we have on plans. And those practices that don't have a plan have thought about introducing one for the first time, because again, they can see that actually this probably, sadly, won't be the last time this kind of situation arises. So the more of the cash flow that they can secure ahead of that, the better. So it's had a very, very positive effect on the membership plan concept. You know, one of the most rewarding parts of my job is when we help take that demotivated dentist and turn them into someone that loves the profession again, and they really enjoy their whole life, not just their career, because the pressures of being particularly an NHS dentist can really intrude on people's social lives and personal lives, family lives, marriages, all of that sort of thing. And I love what we do in terms of helping people get a much, much better balance. And that's unbelievably rewarding. My one regret is that because of the fear that dentists have that patients don't value them, it holds them back from taking some positive steps. And I felt in the past that we needed to try and shorten the decision-making process somehow, because I got fed up of hearing dentists saying, wow, I wish I'd done this sooner. And that meant that they'd endured 1, 2, 3, sometimes 7 years of pain, really, longer than they needed to. And I think that what this crisis has taught us is that what we're doing is the right thing. And we need to be a bit ballsier about how we get that message across, so that we can really, really motivate people and get them making the changes to their lives that they desperately want to do, but lack the confidence to do. So that's, I think, quite an important thing for us, is that we've got to be, I think, a lot more assertive. And we were always really, really at pains to try and avoid looking like we're just trying to to make money out of the dental profession, and it's all about our profit. It absolutely is not. I mean, of course you want commercial success, because otherwise you can't carry on doing what you do. But it's about really, really improving the lives of the practices that we work with, and then allowing them to change the lives of their patients, because dentistry is an amazing career. The benefits that are available to patients, the way that you can change an individual's career prospects or social life through making them feel confident about their smile. I mean, there are not many, many professions where you can have such a positive effect on your customers.
So you're trying to remind them of sort of their place in the world and their importance and how valued they are by the public, the patients and the customers.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that happens, or has definitely happened during the COVID crisis, but happens whenever a dentist leaves the NHS and goes private, is that's the time that they actually put to the test whether or not their patients value them. And for, well, so many dentists, I think they've been really pleasantly surprised to discover just how loved they are by their patients. It's very easy, I think, for the profession to get a little bit misled by the way that dentistry is portrayed in the wider media. Yeah. Because quite often there's negative undertones for that. I do think that cosmetic dentistry is changing that, and we are starting to see a real kind of positive aspect of dentistry being portrayed in the media that will, I think, grow and grow and grow and be very, very helpful. But the negative bit, individual dentists forget they don't really need to worry about what the public at large think. They only need to worry about what their own patients think. And when they put that to the test, that is a fantastic reminder of how well loved they are.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think, I mean, outside of dentistry as well, it's quite easy to become quite overwhelmed by things that you read online. Like you said, the media have a massive role to play in putting across both positive and negative portrayals of dentistry. And it's quite easy to get caught up in that. But like you said, you know, you've got to look at your patient base. And that's where, that's what matters. You know, it's these people who are coming to see you and these people who are coming back or telling their friends and family, and getting the new people in as well. And they're the people that matter. But I completely understand what you mean about sort of the wider circles and the media and social media as well, can have a detrimental impact on the way that dentists sort of view themselves and their work and their practice. But like you said, if you've got people like you guys trying to sort of remind them that they are valued, then that's a good thing, because I think everybody needs a little nudge in the right direction every now and then.
I think so. I mean, it's the world has got used to phrases like continuous improvement, and I think that clearly that's an important thing. How can you not be wanting to continuously improve? But the danger is, going back to a point that you made earlier on actually, is that all you do then is focus on the negatives. And sometimes you need a prompt to think about the positives, and you need to take a step back and think, well, actually, no, there's been a lot of really, really good things. Yes, I need to refine some things, but there's been a lot of really, really positive things. And I think that's part of our role. Like I say, I've seen my whole career as being around giving confidence. And one of the ways you give confidence is by accentuating the positive. And I should say, you know, I could be accused of being quite flippant about leaving the NHS and go private. That's a huge decision. You know, that is possibly the biggest career decision a dentist will make. So you can't underestimate exactly the stress that might be involved in trying to reach that decision and then actually taking that step. But I've helped 500 dentists over the course of my career take that step. My team have helped thousands more. And the trick is really do a proper risk assessment, make sure you're making an informed decision. Because actually on 50 occasions, I've said the time isn't right for you, you need to wait. Because actually you haven't really seen that list of patients long enough for that loyalty and that bond to develop.
Mm. And obviously going back to what we were talking about earlier, obviously one of the reasons why we're talking today is because it's been 25 years since you guys have been around. I mean, well, first of all, before we talk about the future, I mean, what's happened to your party? Is that still in the pipeline?
Yeah, that's a good question. There will be a time to pick that party up, although I suspect it will get lost in a whole kind of post-COVID frenzy of parties. But we will still be marking the occasion with cakes and with videos and with with as much of an online presence as we possibly can.
If anything, this has taught us that nothing can stop celebrations, really. You know, like what we're doing now, all you need is a laptop and a some kind of video call system, and you're away. So
I have to say that one of the most important things that we, I think, have done during the course of the whole lockdown period was largely instigated by one of my team, Sarah, who created a sort of Friday night social club. Yeah. And come 5:30 on a Friday, we're all virtually having a drink and having a virtual party. And I think certainly in those first few weeks, without it, I'd have lost my sanity. I think it was just brilliant. So you're absolutely right that you can compensate, but like I would guess 99% of us, I'm really looking forward to being able to party in person.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it's nice because it makes you do things that you arguably wouldn't have done previously. You know, you spend more time with your colleagues, your family, and your friends. And there are certain, like you said, you know, it's been a horrible time, and we wouldn't wish it on anybody, and we would not want to repeat it. But taking those little positives out of it, it's definitely made, I think it's brought people closer, both at a sort of a professional and personal level. So yes, definitely a bonus.
Agreed, but
25 years, what do the next 25 years hold for you guys? Again, very broad question there. But
yeah, no, it's a great question. And you know, we're constantly looking, maybe not 25 years ahead, but we're constantly looking 5 to 10 years ahead and trying to figure out how we need to evolve and adapt and change. I think that for us, if I start with what I think is going to happen to the dental practices that we work with, the environment, I think, is going to change. As I said, I think it's going to become a much more privately orientated environment. I think cosmetic dentistry is going to grow and grow and grow. I think technology and the various clinical solutions available will grow and grow and grow. I think that whilst in the short, well, probably in the next few years, supply demand things will work in the favor of the profession, but then I think it will become a popular profession because people will see it as a very successful career and rewarding career to have again. And I think it will become more competitive, and I think that you'll see practices identifying different patient groups that they want to service, their different niches. It'll become a much more diversified profession, I think. And there's the role of the dental chains that, you know, quite how far that will extend into the profession, I don't know. Will they own, you know, within that 25-year period, will that mean that 95% of dental practices are owned by 5 big corporates? Possibly. I personally doubt that. I think that there will be a huge part for them to play, but I think there'll also be a role for lots of very niche providers. I think it's really interesting when you see what's happening with coffee houses, where we suddenly were dominated by Costa's and Starbucks and things, and then now you're starting to see all the emergence of these independent little coffee shops all over the place, and almost that sort of mix, I think, is what's going to happen with dentistry. So different people servicing different client groups in different ways, and I think that what that means for us is that we have to get even more diversified in terms of the type of business support that we provide. We probably have to get more involved in helping adapt to the regulatory changes, get more sophisticated support for marketing and communication to patients. Financial management, I think, is going to become more and more important, so maybe there's more we can do there. So I see us evolving a lot of business support services over the years ahead, and being, you know, a lot more than simply a plan administrator.
So exciting times then, really, you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, in those 30 years, whilst I said before that I can't recall anything like the level of change we've gone through in the last 4 months, and the pressure, that's been something I've never really seen before, either on the professional or felt personally. It's been the most intense period of my career. That has not diminished my sense of optimism about the future. So I know it's going to be tough over the next few months, and we've got this whole kind of spectre of a second wave and what that might mean and might do. But when I look years on, I'm only positive about how things will evolve.
I think that's a good thing, and I think that's something that needs to be said, and I know it's horrible, and it sometimes I think it can feel quite uncomfortable to to say that right now in a way, because of what's happened and the loss, you know, not just of life, but of businesses and people's livelihoods. But as always, it's going to have to be one of those things. We're going to come out of it, and we will come out of it. And even if there is a second wave, that will pass as well. And it's just a case of, you know, getting through it, sticking together, and taking things away from it.
I think that's a really important point, because there is a danger that in my positivity, I could either come across as being in denial about reality, or insensitive to the trauma that people have experienced, and I'm not at all. I think that one of the things that we as an organisation, and I'd like to think that me as an individual, is highly empathetic. It doesn't stop me looking forward, and it doesn't stop me, if anything, those characteristics maybe make me realise the importance of hope. Because otherwise people will just give up, and then it's just about existing, and there can be more to it than that. And I think I've written in one of my columns recently about this phrase that you've probably seen circulating on social media during the course of the whole crisis, which is we're not all in the same boat, even if we are all in the same storm. And I quite like that. And I think that what's happened, if I take that boat analogy, is people's boats have been in danger of capsizing. And to a certain extent, we could still get hit by squalls that could mean that a capsize is a possibility. So you can't get complacent about that. But there'll come a time where you then have to think, right, where am I going to sail this boat? Where is the right direction to head in? And I think it's important for people to as things start stabilizing, start thinking about, okay, where am I heading? And it's all the classic, slightly corny stuff about what is my vision for the practice? What's changed? Now, and the other phrase, while I'm trotting out these little sayings, that I've really liked, in fact, I've got it on the wall of my office here, is in the rush to return to normal, take this time to consider which parts of normal are worth rushing back for. And I love that phrase, because some of the positives for me are I'm exercising more, I'm drinking more water, I've got a much better diet, because I was normally traveling all over the place visiting dental practices. I visited 3,500 practices during the course of my career, and I can be anywhere, and trying to get into some kind of routine and pattern is impossible until lockdown emerged, and then I've been able to do it. So I want to keep that sort of thing going. But I think it is really important that we don't forget or trivialize all of the tough things about what's happened over the last few months, but that we also start at some point recognizing we need to look forward and give ourselves a sense of direction and purpose that has come under attack over the last few months.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I completely agree. And I think that applies to not just dentistry, but just everything. I think that's a good way and a good outlook in life, but especially now during this time where everyone can feel sort of quite overwhelmed with what's going on. But like you said about, you know, these phrases that you were saying just there, they're cliches for a reason, because they work. I always say that. I'm a fan of them. But moving away from dentistry for the final part of this, I always ask people at the end of these what they like to do outside of dentistry and outside your career. So, I mean, lockdown obviously has given all of us a chance to sort of try something new. But is there anything about you that people might not know? Anything you enjoy to do outside of your career?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I'm a very keen squash player and things like that. And actually, during lockdown, I've learnt to cook vegetarian meals, courtesy of Jamie Oliver. So that's been quite rewarding for me as well. But I think the thing that has helped me during lockdown is something I actually started doing about 3.5 years ago, when I'd had a December day when I got up for work in the dark, got ready for work in the dark, drove to work in the dark, spent all day in the office, left the office in the dark, drove home in the dark, etc. So I didn't see daylight. And I can remember thinking, that is not right. You should have had a break where you got outside and you saw some daylight. Right, New Year's resolution. You have to take a daily break. And what you do is you evidence that you've had that break by taking a photograph of you of the outdoors and posting it on Instagram the same day. 3.5 years later, I haven't missed a day. And it's been the most, I look at it and it was quite a silly little thing to do, but it's been brilliant. And particularly during lockdown, because I every day I'd be thinking, right, I've got to go for my hour exercise and take my photo. And I would, because you're, instead of being able to get a variety of locations, you're stuck in Chester, you have to get quite creative about what photos you take, and it's been brilliant. So Nigel KJ, if anyone's interested, but I have really, really enjoyed doing that, and I suspect not many people realise I do that.
Oh no, that's a really nice idea. It's almost like a sort of like a visual diary, I guess, in a way, and you can look back at them and think, you know, this is what I was doing at that time. I might copy you and do that myself.
But you're right. I love it. I mean, one of the things that I hadn't realised is that, I've only got like 300 or so followers, yeah, but I don't know most of them. Most of them I've just been followed in the last couple of days by someone from Sao Paulo. And it's this sort of common interest in terms of nature and the outdoors and landscapes and that sort of thing. And some of them are really, really good photographers. So whereas it started off as just a click, there's the evidence, I've gradually had to get better and better at taking photographs. I've learned a new skill. I'm exercising. I'm getting outdoors. I'm taking breaks. And there's a sort of mindfulness element to it, because you're having to keep your eye out for what would make a good photo. So you're shutting out work and those sorts of pressures while you're doing that. So it went from something just really silly to actually it's just the way I live now.
That's really nice, and also it's something to look forward to. You know, no one can deny that sometimes you can have a tough morning and you just need to, and you know, you look forward to the walk, but also it's something to, it's just, like you said, it's just something to take your mind off the everyday, you know, the difficulties or the stresses of work, which everybody needs every now and then. So
absolutely
good tactic. Like I said, I'm gonna give that a go. But thank you very much for taking the time out of your day to talk to me. It's been a great chat.
No, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed it.